We're going to look at Genesis 8, verses 20 to 22. Then Noah built an altar to the Lord and took some of every clean animal and some of every clean bird and offered burnt offerings on the altar. And when the Lord smelled the pleasing aroma, the Lord said in his heart, I will never again curse the ground because of man, for the intention of man's heart is evil from his youth. Neither will I ever again strike down every living creature as I've done. While the earth remains, seed time and harvest, cold and heat, summer and winter, day and night shall not cease. Just sung summer and winter, springtime and harvest, sun, moon and stars in their courses above. Join with all nature in manifold witness to your great faithfulness, mercy and love. And the changing seasons, the passing years, one harvest after another, they are reminders to us of the immense faithfulness of God. And maybe you're expecting me to be reminding you of how we should be so thankful to God for giving us food for another year and reminding you that in reality our food doesn't all come from Burslington Towers, Tesco, or from Sainsbury's Hedge End. There are other supermarkets as well. You have to put that disclaimer in. Ultimately, it comes from God, and if God hadn't blessed us with another harvest, then Sainsbury's shelves would be empty and we would be starving. So I suppose I should be talking about God's wonderful faithfulness in giving us food again this morning. Well, I've already done that to the children. And I think there's something else that this passage tells us about. These passing, ongoing seasons, they remind us also of the patience of God and the mercy of God and the faithfulness of God toward a very guilty, broken world. And that's what Genesis 8 and 9 are telling us. And I want to take you this morning to meet God, the promise keeper, the God who is completely faithful. And in the course of doing this, I'll probably show you some things about God that you'll find uncomfortable, because we're not going to meet the God of our imaginations, the kindly old great uncle God with the long flowing white beard who's pretty harmless and does the best that he can. We're going to meet a God of judgment this morning, but also a God of grace. We're going to meet a God of light and fire and truth, a God who knows everything about us, whose power is awesome and complete. He's a God who is just. He never, ever does what is wrong, nor will he excuse what is wrong. Yet he's kind and he's merciful. And he's prepared to save us from what we deserve at incredible cost to himself. We're going to meet the God who makes promises and who always keeps them. So what have we got here? We've got a man, Noah, and his family, and a whole load of animals disembarking from a very large wooden barge. It's the biggest ship that would ever be built until Isambard Kingdom Brunel came along and built the Great Eastern in 1858. That's quite some feat of engineering. And it was built for one purpose: survival. Was less aerodynamic than a Land Rover and a lot more reliable. Unfortunately, more watertight. But why had they built it? Why had they got into it? Well, because they believed that God was a promise-keeping God. And God had promised that he was going to judge the world because of its sin with a catastrophic global flood. Look back to chapter 6 and verse 5. The Lord saw that the wickedness of man was great in the earth, and that every intention of the thoughts of his hearts was only evil continually. And the Lord was sorry that he'd made man on the earth, and it grieved him to his heart. And then verse 11, now the earth was corrupt in God's sight, and the earth was filled with violence. And this is the first thing that I want to remind you about God. He is a just God. He has to uphold justice. He will stand for what is right. He stands against evil. And when he looks in Genesis 6 at the world that he's made, men and women that he's made in his image, he sees evil only continually. He sees the thoughts of their hearts. He sees the violence of this world. He sees a sin-sick world. And rather than shrugging his shoulders and saying, well, that's fine, just leave that alone, God says, that is not fine. I must act. I want you to accept that that is a good thing. Because if God were to be unjust, then he'd be a terrible God. And this would be an awful world to live in if ultimately there was no justice and evil was allowed to triumph. You hate injustice, don't you? I do. You don't like it when bad people get away with evil things. We want guilty people punished. I think it must be 999 channels on my TV. Well, it goes up to 999. I haven't checked if they're all consecutive numbers. But quite often, the only thing I can find to watch is Police Interceptors. And it's worth having that many channels just to find Police Interceptors. I love watching Police Interceptors. Do you? Yeah, good. And you watch Police Interceptors and they are chasing the car thieves or the people that have just burgled someone's house and they're in their white transit trying to get away. Or they're drug dealers and they've had some intel on them and the police in their Subarus and their whatever else, there are other cars as well, they're chasing them down. And I'm watching this, and I'm not saying I want the bad people to get away. I'm not saying, oh, I really hope they lose the police on this corner. I want the criminals caught. I'm really disappointed when the dogs aren't released to finish the job off, because that's how it should be. I'm sorry if you don't agree with me, but I think it should. And when something happens to us, we want justice. If our car gets damaged or our shed gets broken into and the lawnmower stolen, that'd be quite a good thing, actually. But your house gets broken into, you want justice to be done. We hate injustice. Well, one of the things maybe that frustrates us on this earth is that there is a lack of justice. Let me assure you that with God there will be justice. He sees everything. He doesn't need a great network of CCTV cameras. He knows everything. He reads the thoughts and motives of our hearts. Nothing is hidden from him. And he will punish what is evil because he is just and he is God and he is good. And of course that brings a slight problem, or a big problem for us, in that whilst we long for others to get what they deserve for their badness, there comes a point where we have to look at ourselves too. And whilst we might have managed to create a veneer of respectability over so much of our lives, we haven't starred in an episode of Police Interceptors as yet, and I hope we never will, we haven't been looters or muggers, but there are places where the veneer of respectability begins to become very, very thin, and even we can see through it. We're people who are selfish. We're people who are proud, conceited. I can be such a hypocrite. Tell you about what is right and go on into the week and do what is wrong. We can be really cruel, really unkind in our words. And the biggest problem is we're such idolaters. We will love and worship anything other than the God who created us and who made us and who calls us to himself. We'll say to anything, this is more important than God. We'll live without him. We'll ignore him. We'll offend him. We'll marginalize him and manipulate him. God can stay in his book or in his box, and we'll tell him what he can and can't be. And God says, no, I'm God. I set the rules. I made you. I gave you life. And you're accountable to me, not me to you. And I'm a just God. And I will punish, I must punish all sin. And that includes my life and your life. The God of my imagination is this short-sighted God who sees all of your faults and none of mine. But God isn't like that. He sees me exactly as I am. And he says, Paul Oliver, you will give an account. It's one of the promises of God. And here in Genesis 6 to 10, you see God in action. He was faithful to his promise. He judged a sin-sick, sin-filled world, just as he said he would. And Noah comes out of the ark, and he sees a destroyed earth. What the aftermath of a flood looks like, don't you? You've seen it on your TVs, even a localized flood. Imagine a global flood, wreckage. The sludge, the silt, the chaos, the destruction. Noah sees an earth that was unrecognizable compared with that which he'd known before. And in the midst of all of this ugliness, there is one beautiful thing in the sky, a rainbow. And it's a sign of another promise of God. And here we're taught the mercy of God. Something happens, and God says, I will never again send another global destruction. Verse 20, I will never again curse the earth because of man, for the intention of man's heart is evil from his youth. Neither will I ever again strike down every living creature as I've done. While the earth remains, seed time and harvest, cold and heat, summer and winter, day and night shall not cease. God says he promises that he will not do that again. He gives us this covenant, this sign of the rainbow. Why does God say he will not do it again? Was it because God thinks, oh, I was too strict there? What have I done? Completely overstepped the mark. You dads, you've done that with the children, haven't you? They've been just having a quiet quarrel in the room and you've burst in and you've really thrown around the daddishness and the authority and laid the law down and you banned people from doing this for weeks and weeks on end. And then you thought, oh, what have I done? No, that was not what was needed in that situation. Is God thinking like that? That was a little bit too much, what I've just done. Well, no, God doesn't do wrong. Was it that the flood had served its purpose and changed people? Well, no, look at verse 21. God says, I won't do this again, even though every inclination of the human heart is evil from childhood. There is this new beginning, but nothing has changed. Judgment hasn't changed people. It takes something more. It takes something bigger. And that's where God is heading. And God is saying here, rather than keep stepping in with a whole series of global judgments every couple of decades, rather than keep giving man what he deserves, God is saying, I will be merciful. I will not give them what they deserve. I will be patient. I'll allow time to keep rolling. I'll allow night to follow day and harvest to follow seed time. I'll let history unfold without there being another global judgment until the end comes, while the earth remains. Because God had a bigger plan. Another massive, magnificent, global intervention into this world. And this time it wasn't judgment. It was salvation. And God, in his mercy, holds back judgment whilst he works out salvation on the earth. I won't do that again, he says, while the earth remains. And guess what? He's kept his promise. There's never been another global flood. There's never been another disaster that has wiped out 99.99999% of the population. And that rainbow in the sky is testimony to the faithful, merciful God who's kept his promise and not given this world what it deserves. Even though the actual moral conditions of our hearts, he says, have not changed. But I need to show you more of God. This is the final thing that we see here. We see the grace of God. The flood shows the justice of God. He gave sin what it deserved. The rainbow shows the mercy of God. He promises not to give us what we deserve whilst the earth remains. He's holding back judgment. But God is also gracious. And that means he gives us what we don't deserve. The flood didn't change people. Sin was still in our hearts. And judgment, though pushed back, it still hung over us. But God had this plan, this impossible plan that would deal with sin and would set us free. And the clue is seen in the sacrifices that Noah offers. A sacrifice is something which was offered in the Old Testament as a substitute. It recognized the seriousness of sin. It deserved death, but God was saying, look, if you do this, it's a picture. Something else will stand in your place, and that will be judged instead of you. And Noah gives us little pictures here, but they're only pictures. But they're saying someone, somewhere, is going to take the place of guilty, sinful people like us. And God will judge him instead of us. But who could we find to stand in our place so that we could be saved and right with God? Which one of us could volunteer to go forwards as the one who would represent everybody else and win their salvation? There was none of us who could do it. And so God sent his one and only Son, Jesus Christ, the Son he loved, the Son he'd always been with. He came, was born into this world. He grew up perfect before God. He lived a life that we couldn't live. And then God kept his promise. He offered himself as a sacrifice. He gave his life so that all of that sin that cuts us off from God could be swept away. There was another flood, but it was a flood of grace. This world after Calvary has just been saturated with the gospel, with the mercy of God. And sinners who deserve judgment can be today wrapped in the perfection and the righteousness of Christ and washed clean through his blood. That's good news. Every one of us here knows that we failed. And yet every single one of us here this morning needs to know that that debt can be cancelled. Fully. Completely. The whole past and the present and the future because of what Jesus Christ did for sinners. You don't have to tremble in fear of judgment before God. because Christ died under the judgment of God, so that we can go home to God. We can look forward to a world that is not like it is at the moment. Will be more like what Noah had known before the flood, but even better. The world we've been seeing in Isaiah recently, the new heavens and the new earth. Because God tells us that one day there is going to be another judgment. It won't be by water. God's hung up his water bow. He's finished with it. He says that in Isaiah. I've hung my bow up. Don't need that anymore. But there will be a judgment with fire that will bring this world to an end. And there's one way that we can survive that judgment. There's always a way of salvation through God's judgments, because he wants us to be saved. It was the ark through the flood. And through the final judgment, there's the cross. Jesus Christ will not let any of his people go. He'll not fail one of us. So you've got the flood as a sign of God's justice. You've got the rainbow, sign of his mercy. But you've got the cross as a sign of his grace. You've seen all the way through, God keeps his promises. And the most wonderful promise that God has given you is, if you trust in Jesus Christ, if you call on the name of the Lord, you will be saved. Not you might, not you could be saved. God promises your salvation. And he doesn't take you to be one of his slaves and wreck your life. He's a good God. He doesn't even make you like one of the angels. He makes you one of his sons and daughters. He puts you right alongside Jesus, his eternal son, and says, you're my family. As I've loved him, I love you. And as he is going to be with me forever and ever, so you will be with me forever and ever. All because Jesus Christ gave his life for people like me. I can't understand why. You can't accuse God of being unjust, but you can accuse God of being generous and strangely kind and wonderfully merciful, because he loved people like me and like you and gave up his son so that we could be forever with him. Let's pray. Father in heaven, we ask that we'll understand that this world continues because you are a patient God, and it continues to allow your word to go out into this world so that people will hear about your salvation. And we thank you that that salvation is found not in something that we do, but something you've already done for us. You gave your son to give his life and to rise again so that we could be saved. So we pray for trust and faith in Jesus, that we'll hide in him and know what it is to have peace today and joy and confidence that the past has been dealt with, that there's no war with you anymore, that we're in your family, and we look at you and we can say, Abba, Father. So break open our hearts and flood them with your grace, we ask. Amen.